Find the book of James in your text, if you would, this morning, and turn there. I want to talk about communication with your squad, and I was a little nervous to preach on the subject, so I went to Google this week and found 29 sermons about preaching on communication. I've downloaded one of those. Talking, hearing, listening. It's important. How well does your family communicate with each other? On a scale from 1 to 10. Some of you are really good at it. Some of you not so much. And we kind of fluctuate and go through seasons of how we communicate with the people, the important people that are in our lives. And it doesn't matter whether you're single or retired or blended or you got a house full of kids or you're empty nest. Communication is really a learned skill. You got to practice it in order to get good at it. And we don't because it requires a lot of effort. But more importantly, listen, good communication requires a lot of grace. It requires a lot of grace. James, in the very first chapter, writes these words, beginning in verse 19. Understand this, my dear brothers and sisters. You must be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to get angry. Verse 20. Human anger does not produce the righteousness God desires. Human anger does not produce the righteousness God desires. So there's three laws that he gives us for personal communication. I want to talk about those today. I want to dissect those. Because when we apply these in our relationships, it helps our relationships succeed. It helps our relationships become stronger. When we violate these, the health of those relationships can oftentimes wind up in jeopardy. Or at least wind up greatly diminished. And so it's an important skill set. And so we just take them one by one and we look at them. He says, be quick to listen. What does that mean? It means that you pay close attention when somebody's talking to you. Just because you're listening doesn't mean you're hearing. You with me? This December, I will have been married 35 years. I'm still trying to acquire the skill of listening and hearing when college football is on. I'm still not any good at it. It's just not a skill I've acquired yet. I have to at least hit mute if I'm going to listen and hear when there's a football game on. But it doesn't have to be football. We are slaves now. We are addicted to our technology, to our phones, to our TVs, to our headsets and our earmuffs, to our books, to our video games. The greatest threat to communication is technology. And it's designed to help us communicate better. It has actually done just the opposite. You don't have to take my word for it. Do a Google search. There's all kinds of studies out there that talk about diminished relationship satisfaction as a result of technology and electronics. The people in our life should feel like they are way more important than the reels on our screen. And let's be honest, our fascination with headphones and video games and social media and TikTok is not about enhancing relationships, it is about escaping reality. You with me? Your addiction to technology is about escaping reality, just like any other addiction. Addicted to drugs, it's about escaping reality. Addicted to sex, it's about escaping reality. Addicted to food, it's about escaping reality. Addicted to porn, it's about escaping reality. It is where we go when we no longer want to deal with or cope with life or by the people that bother us. Being quick to listen requires an intentional focus. You have to willfully participate in the process. And the cost for not being willing to participate in the process, to listen and understand, will produce diminishing returns in the relationships that you hope to establish or maintain. Mark, recording the words of Jesus, says this, chapter 4, anyone with ears to hear should listen and understand. This is Jesus speaking. Last time I checked, everybody in the room got ears. You should listen and understand. Then Jesus added, pay close attention to what you hear. Really? Does he have to be all specific now? Yeah. Jesus doesn't mince words. Jesus knows exactly what he's saying. Pay close attention to what you hear. The closer you listen, the more understanding you will be given. Oh, man, come on, Jesus. You mean the closer I listen, the more understanding I'll be given? That's what he says. And this applies not only to spiritual truths in your life, but this applies to relational truths in your life. And you will receive even more. Verse 25. To those who listen to my teaching, more understanding will be given. But to those who are not listening, even what little understanding they have will be taken away from them. Because if you're pretending to listen, but you're not really hearing, then you're going to act and react wrongly to what you think you know. This is why the news media sound bites are so dangerous. Because it doesn't give you a full picture of anything. I did read an interesting article this week about something pilots refer to as the communication loop. And it is their conversation with the tower. And it is them repeating to the tower what the tower has said to them, and the tower saying to them, repeating to them what the pilot has said to them. They repeat back and forth several times so that each participant in that airplane's safety journey can be completely clear about what's going on. I want you to land on runway 13. You said runway 13, tower. Is that correct? Yes, that's correct. Tower 1-3, runway 13. All right, making my way to runway 13. They want to make sure they're clear and understand each other. It goes something like this. Someone speaks. You listen. And you repeat what is said. Then you get feedback. Then the person that you gave the feedback to processes the feedback, and they determine whether or not you understood what was spoken. And then they either correct at this point and go, no, that's not what I said, or they continue in the conversation. This is how it plays out in the family. The wife says to the husband, I'm concerned about our finances. If the husband is actively listening, then he will respond appropriately. If he's not actively listening, he'll go, what's the matter? Don't I make enough money for you? And if the wife wants to continue down that road and fight this out, she can do that. Or she can respond and go, no, that's not what I said. And then she repeats what she says, and then the husband has an opportunity to correct the course. The wife says, I'm concerned about the finances. The husband's paying attention and listening intently. The wife's worried about the finances. How do I respond? Oh, help me understand about your concern for the finances. And she says, it concerns me that the balances are low and that we stopped following a budget several months ago. And the husband's like, I understand. You're worried about not following a budget and the low balances. Let's sit down and work out a plan to fix that. Good communication. You say, Pastor Kevin, that sounds dumb. Yeah, it does, because it's really not that hard. It's really pretty simple. But it all has to do with our intent. We need to be quick to listen. If we started listening hard to each other in the church and in our squad and to neighbors on our street, the relationships we have with those people could improve dramatically. We are to be quick to listen. Jesus says, if you got ears, pay attention to what you hear. The closer you listen, the more understanding you'll be given. We all want understanding in our relationships. You got to concentrate on what's being said. This is how I do my Christmas shopping. starting about now, tomorrow's August 1st, we'll be watching TV. And there'll be an advertisement for a board game on television, and Debbie will say something like, "Oh, that looks fun. Maybe we should get that." So while she's sitting there talking, I'm actively listening. I pull up my cell phone or my iPad. I go to Amazon.com. I find that game. I put it in my wish list for Christmas. When Christmas gets here, I move all of the things in the wish list over to my cart, and I hit checkout. She does that throughout the course of September, October, November. Christmas morning shows up. I've given her all of these things that she said, "Oh, that looks fun. We should try that. Oh, I wonder if that works. Oh, I bet that electric blanket would work really good in the camper on cold night." Amazon inbox. Men, save yourself a Christmas hassle and just listen to your wife. And when she says something, go to Amazon. Put it in your cart. You'll be thankful on Christmas morning. It's a beautiful thing. Listening and hearing says, "I love you." It says that you are important. It says that you matter to me. It says the things that you find interesting matter to me. When you really love someone, you listen hard like that. James said that one of the greatest skills you can acquire is to be quick to listen. The second thing he says is to be slow to speak. I've kind of reworded that because what he's saying here is that you need to respond carefully but honestly. Responding is okay. Responding rashly is not okay. Be prudent when you respond. Your grandmother may have said something like this: "You've been given two ears and one mouth for a purpose." Right? You've been given ears that were open and a mouth that can close on a purpose. Very few people get in trouble by saying too little. Right? I've never gotten in trouble by keeping my mouth shut. The other? More times than I care to count. The truth about words is that you can't unspeak them. You can't unspeak them. When they're said, when they're out, they're out. Oh, you might be able to apologize and say that you're sorry a time or two, but those harsh words have already been released from your mouth into the heart and into the mind and into the narrative of that relationship. Very hard to undo that. And you have hurt somebody you love, and you've hurt somebody who probably loves you. And if you're careless with your words enough, the love that you share will diminish. Because hurtful words erode the trust that the relationship was established on in the first place. Solomon writes, Proverbs 13, "Whoever guards their mouth preserves their life. The one who opens wide their lips comes to ruin." Psalm 141, "Set a guard over my mouth, O Lord. Keep watch over the door of my lips." When I was newly married, I wrote that on an index card and I kept it taped to the mirror in the bathroom. "Set a guard over my mouth, O Lord. Keep watch over the door of my lips." I may have an opinion, but it doesn't always have to be expressed. I've told you before, I grew up in a house where my father was an engineer. And engineers have a very exacting way of getting something done. I'm not an engineer. I don't care about engineering ways. I want to get it done the way that fits best for me. And I always heard about it. I don't understand why you're doing it that way. I don't understand why you did it that way. But I got the same result. It doesn't matter. You didn't do it the right way. Sometimes those things don't need to be voiced. I said 2 or 3 weeks ago that if you're raising your kids exactly the same, some of them are going to not turn out the way you want them to turn out, because you got to raise them according to what's best for their learning and expression style. Sometimes they need help. Sometimes they don't. Proverbs 21. Whoever keeps his mouth and his tongue keeps himself out of trouble. Maybe you're sitting here this morning going, well, it doesn't sound like I get to be heard. That's not true at all. We're being advised to use caution and to speak wisely with love and with integrity. Be quick to listen, slow to speak. Jesus told his disciples, he said, I'm sending you out like sheep among wolves. Therefore, you need to be shrewd as snakes and innocent as doves. Along the same line. You got to know what to do and when to do it and how to do it. Paul says sometimes you got to become all things to all people in order to get the goal accomplished. But he also said that if you don't have love, then you're just a loud noisemaker. A very important element in family communication is the willingness to be honest and address problems. I told you last week about my children would come downstairs and they'd call a family meeting. One of those family meetings included conversation with Seth. Daddy, you yell. And when you yell, it hurts my feelings. It hurts me. I'm like, okay, so what do we need to do? This is what he said. He said, I'd like you to sign a contract that says you won't yell at me. And I looked at him and I said, okay, you write it up, we'll agree to the terms and I'll sign it. And so he went and got a piece of notebook paper and he wrote something on there that said, I, Daddy, promise to never yell at Seth ever again. And I said, well, that's pretty narrow. I said, how about we change the words that said, I, Daddy, will try not to yell at Seth, period. Okay, I'm amiable with that. He didn't use the word amiable. But I signed it, he signed it, we dated it, and that thing was magnetized to the side of my working refrigerator for as long as the working refrigerator was in my house. As a reminder that sometimes problems have to be addressed in the family, in the house. Part of good family communication involves honesty and openness, spoken in love, but oh my friends, it requires grace. It requires grace. It requires a teachable spirit. Ephesians chapter 4, again, Paul says, until we reach unity in the faith and in the knowledge of the Son of God, become mature, attaining to the whole measure of the fullness of Christ, no longer being immature, instead, speaking the truth in love, we will in all things grow up into Him who is the head, that is Christ. Unity and maturity and the fullness of Christ comes when you and I begin to learn how to speak the truth in love. Unity and maturity and fullness of Christ comes when you and I begin to learn to speak the truth in love. Some people use truth as a club and they use it to beat others over the head. And they may not ever say it, but in the back of their mind, there's like, you know, the truth hurts. And when we have the attitude that the truth hurts, what we're really saying is that I'm trying my best to hurt you with the truth. When we speak the truth in love, it must be done in a loving way. Some people think, well, the most loving thing I can do is keep the peace. We talked about this last week. Jesus said, blessed are the peacemakers, not the peacekeepers. Sometimes battles have to be fought. When Jesus encountered people in the New Testament who came to him with a sin problem, Jesus inevitably addressed the sin problem. And oftentimes he would say, "Go and sin no more." But he always did it in a loving way. It is okay to be honest with your family members, as long as you do it with love and grace in a way that honors Christ. Quick to listen, slow to respond, carefully, with honesty, and without anger. You and I have to keep our anger in check. Slow to get angry. Let me blow your mind this morning. Paul is giving us permission to be and get angry. We are to be like God, right? We are to be conformed to the image of His Son. Do you realize that over 700 times in the Old and New Testament we are told that God got angry? If God is perfect and God is holy, but God can express anger, that means that you and I can express anger as well. Here's the difference. Righteous anger and personal anger are very different. Righteous anger as the result of injustice. Righteous anger as the result of the weak and the helpless being exploited. Righteous anger in hypocrisy being allowed to rule and dominate the lives of believers in the church or in your small group. It's okay to get angry. Just don't let that anger cross over into sin. And it crosses over into sin when you want the other person to hurt as a result of what you're trying to correct. Non-sinful anger produces the righteous desires of God. As long as you don't walk away with a feeling of superiority because of your righteousness. Remember what James says in verse 20? Human anger does not produce the righteousness that God desires. But righteous anger is acceptable. In your anger, don't sin. And in your righteous anger, it becomes sin as soon as you decide that you're being righteous. My anger is justified because I am righteous. Because then it's not about God, it's about you. And that's what human anger is concerned with. Human anger is not concerned about the righteousness of God. Human anger is concerned about me. Human anger is concerned about my will, my wishes, my way, my righteousness. This is why the Pharisees were wrong on every level. They lived their life expressing righteous anger, but their righteous anger was always based on their righteousness. They stand on the street corners and they pray, "Oh, I thank you that I'm not like them." If you're trying to bring about righteous change in your family, then you need to stand up for the righteousness of God, but you can't do it in a self-righteous way. Got to do it in love. Keeping human anger in check is a lesson that I learned way too late in life. I was an angry kid. I was an angry and rebellious teenager. I was an angry married young man. And I brought children into this world and made them the recipient of my anger. But through the years, and through much repentance and much heartbreak, and many honest conversations with people who loved me and had my best interest at heart, I learned that my unchecked anger not only wounds those around me, but my unchecked anger wounds me too. My anger left scars on those I loved. but my anger also inflamed the scars that I already had. My anger left scars on those I love, but it also inflamed the scars that I already had. And until I was mature enough to begin to deal with the scars that I already had, I was not in a position to not leave scars on other people. The other thing I've learned in all of this is that my tone matters. Your tone matters. My tone is typically the key indicator of my self-righteousness, which means I've crossed over from godly righteousness to self-righteousness. My tone communicates what I'm feeling under the surface. I grew up in Louisiana, crying out loud. I spent most of my younger years in Louisiana. There's a reason they call us raging Cajuns. I also grew up in a home where whoever yelled the loudest won the argument. Therefore, tone wasn't important. The more banter that went back and forth, the louder you talked, the more you had an opportunity to be the victor. Can't you people understand this? Tone matters. And my tone often negates what I'm trying to convey. It thwarts my attempt of being heard. We tend to get angrier over our slighted pride than over the marring of God's glory. We tend to get angrier over a minor inconvenience than grievous injustice. We're self-righteously angry like the older brother in the story of the prodigal, or maybe like Jonah over the death of a silly little plant when the souls of 120,000 people were at stake. We read in 2 Corinthians that anger is rooted in quarreling and jealousy and hostility and slander and gossip and conceit and disorder. Paul tells the church in Galatians 5 that it's anchored with enmity and strife and fits of rage and rivalry and dissensions and divisions. Sinful anger was so common in us that in Colossians we're reminded to put away anger and wrath and malice. And that Jesus said in His Sermon on the Mount that everyone who is angry with another is going to be liable of a stricter judgment. Look, you're never going to manage this perfectly in your life. We live in a fallen, broken, crazy world right now. But we can grow in grace. And we can practice these things. And we can ask God for help. We can pray over these things. We can ask God to help us be quick to listen and slow to speak and slow to anger. It's all part of being conformed to His image. Communication in your family and your squad is not a luxury. It's a necessity. And today you can choose to partner with Jesus and the two of you can begin developing the skills to communicate in a way that honors Christ, demonstrates love and respect to your people, and to help your relationships be relationships that are pleasing to God. Choose that path today. Hard listening. Slow speaking, managed anger. It's doable, but not without a great deal of effort. May God help us put it into practice today. Father, help us to take the words that James writes and put them in practice in our life. Help us experience grace to offer forgiveness to those who've hurt us with their words, their anger, their tone. Help us be broken if we are the ones who have caused the hurt. Help all concerned to find our way back to You so that relationships can be restored and your kingdom can be advanced in our home and with our squad. In your name, amen.